Welcome to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the show. It's Monday. We're going to talk NASCAR. Chris Graham here with Rod Mullins. And so we got our first look in 2024 at Phoenix, where the season will end. And, you know, it's not quite the consolation that Christopher Bell would want. He got the win yesterday. Mm-hmm. He, of course, was in the championship four in Phoenix a few months ago for the 2023 season. Didn't get much of a ride that day. But I say not much of a consolation. Hey, he got the win, and you know, that's got to feel somewhat good for him and his team going forward this season.
Yeah, you know, you can't say enough about what they needed of this shot in the arm going into Phoenix and then coming out of there with the win. But I think more importantly, it's not as much Christopher Bell as Toyota needed this shot in the arm, because I found this statistic to be the thing that kind of got me. I think if I'm reading this right, all these different factors that piled up this past weekend at Phoenix, with them getting off the, you know, the haulers, putting the cars out there, turning some great laps, the Toyotas turning some great laps and so forth, with Bell winning, Toyota drivers had led a total of 15 laps in the last four next generation races combined. That's unreal. And that just, you know, Toyota at one point was, you know, so dominant here a couple of seasons ago, but of course the next generation car, but it seems like they haven't found what makes that car work to the degree that it worked at Phoenix. And it just happened to come in all at the same time. Everything just worked together for, you know, the good. And, you know, they've got this new body style also that I think has made a big difference. And what's sad, Toyota and Ford dominated the top 10. Only one Chevrolet made it in. After Chevrolet had won already three races on the season, Chevrolet has their worst performance being in the top 10 at Phoenix. And it's like, hey, are things going to get any better before they get to Bristol? We're just going to have to wait and see. It didn't look good for Chevrolet this past weekend. Ford always has a pretty good, strong short track program. And this downforce package that they took with them, this short track downforce package they took with them to Phoenix, it will work a little bit at Bristol, but we've got a couple of different factors with Bristol of how it's going to be. The high banks is going to be one thing. This was set up more for a flattened track. It's going to actually benefit the drivers probably more getting this experience at Phoenix as they get ready to go into Martinsville at the 1st of April.
Yeah, and we'll tease our listeners and viewers out there. Rod's going to be both at the Bristol race this weekend. He'll be in Martinsville next month too. So yeah, we'll get some up close and personal observations from those. But so the win there, you know, and Rod, there's part of the story that's a little personal part of the story too. I mean, not only Bell, you know, the motor issues early in the race last year that knocked mm-hmm. him out of the championship four, but also Phoenix is where this racing team, the Gibbs Racing team, lost such an important member of the family 2 years ago. So in another respect, a big win for the team.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost as though Phoenix is kind of like Hendricks Martinsville is a certain way. You have this happen, and you know, we're talking about the JD Gibbs thing when JD passed away unexpectedly and took a lot of people by surprise, including probably his biggest supporter, I guess, of anything, and that was Denny Hamlin. You know, Denny Hamlin was kind of just floored about it. Of course, you've got Ty Gibbs, that his son, JD's son, that was running. It was a big adjustment for these teams, especially last year. And, you know, pardon the pun, it's kind of the point where all the wheels fell off for Toyota. I mean, that's what it seemed like. And that coming up on the very end of the season, and JD had passed away, I think a couple of races before, but they had just kind of said, you know, leave us alone. Let us, you know, go and do our thing here while we try to grieve and deal with this. And a lot of people asked the question, what was going to happen? Well, I think we're starting to see some things. I think the team has come together. And also the big news coming out this past week that kind of surprised me, Joe Gibbs Racing is out now going to have a brand ambassador, and it's going to be Bobby Labonte. So they're bringing back a former champion, sort of in the same way that you would treat Richard Petty and Jimmy Johnson to a degree with Legacy Motor Club. I think that's what they're going to do. They're bringing him out, and he's going to observe things, and he's going to see things, and that also be more of, I guess, the PR end of it so far for Joe Gibbs Racing to kind of help things out. So they're giving him a role in it, but I think it's a step in the right direction for Toyota and for Joe Gibbs Racing.
You mentioned the passing of Quay Gibbs a couple years ago. It was hours after Ty Gibbs had won the Xfinity Championship.
Right.
And so obviously that's Ty finished third in this race, his career best finish at the NASCAR Cup Series level. So yeah, not only the win for Bell, but Gibbs running pretty well too.
Right. And I mentioned JD, and I'm sorry, it should have been Coy is what I should have said right there. But yeah, JD passed away a little bit earlier. He had some problems in Denny Hamlin. But yeah, Coy Gibbs, when he passed away unexpectedly, that kind of caught a lot of people off guard. And like you said, he won that championship. Ty won that championship. And then having to deal with this sort of thing. So it was a big step for them. And I think also it was a big step for some of the other Toyota teams that were also there in the race, because I can't really let it go without saying, you know, here, Denny Hamlin, he started on the pole. They had a good performance there for what they had. But you had Tyler Reddick. He was in the mix there for most of the race. Eric Jones was doing well in the 43 car for the Legacy Motor Club. You had a lot of different factors in there. And, you know, you had some Fords. Chris Buescher, I think, finished top three, something of that nature, top two, top three. And so that looked good there. But then Chevrolet, the only team that managed to be able to, you know, gain anything was Ross Chastain and the Trackhouse crew. They managed to finish, I think, somewhere around sixth or seventh, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so good for Trackhouse, but not good performance altogether for Chevrolet.
So explain to our listeners and viewers, you talked about the aerodynamics package. It's new for short tracks. I mean, they've been using this on the super speedways, but they're trying to produce more passing on the shorter tracks. There were also new tires from Goodyear with thicker treads, trying to, you know, maybe help with that as well. How does this work? How does it make races more competitive with what they're trying to do?
It kind of evens it out, I guess, about the horsepower sort of thing. And I think you probably heard Denny Hamlin make a connection early on, and he said, you know, here they are, they're kind of holding us back a little bit on some of these speeds of what we could be capable of. You're kind of like putting them all together, and you're kind of like in a little slot car mix is what you are. You're kind of going around the track. Everybody's kind of even until somebody goes and bumps somebody, and then it kind of changes the whole scheme of the race is the way it goes. The thicker tire package is because you're on that flat surface. You're also using a lot of brake also to control your tire. You're trying to prevent a lot of tire wear. And I'm sure that Goodyear has probably put together a package, a thicker tire to reduce the wear and reduce the possibility of any kind of blowouts, especially on that track. It can be quite abrasive sometimes, especially on some of those tires. I think that's another thing. The nose configuration this year on the Toyotas is new. They've changed some things around on the Fords and also with the Chevrolets. I think the Ford Mustang, they call it the Dark Horse now, I believe is what they refer to this model as. And it's got some subtle little changes in the front. And all of this is supposed to produce more, you know, like you said, even passing with people, being able to pass back and forth. I think we saw that with one of the races in the lead change of 47 or 48 times during the course of the race. But as for dominating, nobody has clearly dominated as of yet. The only thing was Christopher Bell yesterday, 50 laps. He dominated right there toward the very end by leading those 50 laps. But, you know, they'd had problems. They'd had problems really going back into last year, and this was their really first big dominant performance. So I think Toyota's found some answers to this new package, or at least what they've got, and they're going to see how it goes. Some of this package may also figure into when they go to Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. They're going to be on flat surface. They're going to be going up some hills and so forth, but everything is flat. They're not going to have any kind of banking. Bristol's going to be their big test, and they're going to see how well things can hold together for them when they go into the turns, the straightaway, the front and back stretch. Not really that much of an issue. You've got a slant to it, but it's going to work the car. So we'll see how the package holds up, especially under Bristol concrete conditions and not dirt this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You had talked about the banking and how that'll impact you. It's the kind of thing that you might think, hey, they'll kind of get some results from this race, not just the results and who wins and finishes and all that kind of stuff, but the numbers, inside the numbers there. And they, you know, who knows, the second race this year, they might adjust the package a little bit there. But I guess the weather looks warmer this weekend than maybe we had feared it could be. I don't think you're going to have to worry about snow in Bristol. So how will that impact the race? The fact that now I think there might be a forecast for some rain perhaps on the weekend, but otherwise it'll be warmer. How do you think that's going to impact the racing conditions?
If it's heat, it's going to hold in the tires a little bit better. It's going to provide a little bit more stick to the track is what it's going to do. Let's look at concrete. Concrete as overall, if you look at pavement, pavement gets hot. It gets slick after a little while. With concrete, it doesn't really change temperature all that much. It absorbs a lot. It's white, and it, you know, absorbs a lot of heat is what it does, and it kind of dissipates that heat. But those tires, once they get hot, the air temperature is hot. You know, they're going to have a little bit of a problem. I'm not going to say a problem, but a little bit of an advantage, let's say, for being able to stick to the track a little bit better. I don't know if they're going to put the compound down. They put a sticky compound down before that kind of helps them coming out of the turns to where it gives the tires a little bit more grip. We'll have to see what Goodyear has provided for them in a tire this year at Bristol. You know, hey, I mean, what, 2-3 years? We have been looking at a dirt track. You know, we've been looking at dirt racing. So we're going back to a tire that, you know, should resemble something that we would see when we go to there in September, late summer, and we start seeing the after effects of it at night when everything starts cooling down. This is actually going to start sometime around 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, a lot of heat will be coming into that track that day if we have, you know, sunny skies. And if that happens, we'll see probably the tires are going to stick, but we could also, depending on how the pressure is of them and how the going around the track could be, who knows what could happen. We could see blowouts and we could see them veer into the wall like they used to. And gosh, that's something you don't forget when you hear a car coming around a turn and you're there in the turn and you're taking pictures, even if you've got the headsets on to protect your hearing and so forth, you hear that boom. When that boom goes off inside of a racetrack of, you know, 40 cars screaming around that track at the same time, you hear it. Oh, you hear that boom go off. And when it does, you know, somebody's going to be into the wall one way or the other.
I know technically, Phoenix is a 1 mile track and that's considered a short track, but, right. Bristol's 0.533 miles. That's a short track. Am I wrong? Is this the first race at this size track? Yes. This season. Okay, so I thought I had that right. So who traditionally races well at Bristol in this very unique environment, especially, and that's an important fact because this is the first time this season on a really short track.
Kyle Busch has raced good there before. He's been the recipient. I know in the dirt race, he was the recipient of a win there when it was least expected his last year there when he was with Gibbs Racing. But you also have to factor in the Hendrick cars are good there. Chase Elliott runs good. Chase Elliott's been fairly quiet so far this season. He's not really been impressive so far. He would like nothing more than to get back on the win streak again and be able to dominate at a short track. That's where he won the All-Star race a couple of years ago when COVID was going on. I think he'd like to have that happen. The Hendrick cars usually run really well at Bristol. Kyle Larson has run well at Bristol. Kyle Larson, I think, was one of the reasons why we might not see dirt back at Bristol for a long time because, you know, he normally runs dirt all the time during the course of the week. He'll run as many as 5 and 6 races during the course of a week and then, you know, get ready, go in where he has to on Saturday and Sunday, and then he starts it all over again. He didn't like the dirt. He hasn't liked the dirt the past couple of years that they had it there. And he said, I think they need to just go back to concrete racing. And that's what he wants. And so we're going to see if he can really, you know, stick to it this time and see what he can come up with. Christopher Bell, he likes that track. He's also won there too. We've got a number of different people that could possibly show up in the winner's circle. Chris Buescher, he's had kind of a, you know, so-so season so far, finished top 3, top 5 this year, this past week. Buescher's won there during the night race. So anything could happen on this track. And, you know, it's according to how high you're going to get up on that banking. If you get up there and the marbles is what they call them, those little balled up pieces of rubber that start coming off of those tires, and that gets you scooting, then you're in trouble. You've got to be able to have a car that's going to have the downforce that's going to, you know, stick up on that upper side of that upper part of the racetrack and be able to come down through there in the turns and then navigate the front and back stretch as to what you need to with sometimes some lap cars, what you're going to run into.
That's, I was going to say, the racing here is so different than it is on a super speedway. The cars are 2.5 miles apart. I mean, they can be at least on a lap. Here, there's no spacing. I mean, you're catching lap cars all the time, I'm sure. Everybody's crunched in there together. This is a test of your skill, maybe more in a way than any other kind of track, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's a test of your skill. It's also a test of your endurance also on this track. And I think I mentioned this in a podcast several years ago. You know, I had a chance to ride with Darrell Waltrip several years ago, and I wanted to force myself so bad to try to, as we were going into the turns, your head and your body, the way that car is, you're going like this. You're leaned over, and you're trying every way you can, because practical science, if you want to call it that, makes you want to go and straighten your head back up to where you can hold it. But the G forces are just so rough on you as you're going through there. These guys are really practiced in the whole thing of 500 laps at Bristol. They have to be. You know, I've heard everything from Dale Earnhardt Jr. They talk about what's the temperature going to be inside the car. If it's a cool night, you know, they don't have too much to worry about. If it's hot, now let's just put it this way. If it's in the 70s on Sunday when they race, probably on the infield, we're probably talking somewhere in the neighborhood, maybe in the 90s, somewhere temperature wise and stuff. And then they get in those hot cars, you know, they'll evaporate. You know, this stuff will evaporate. If they're sweating, getting hot inside that suit, they evaporate. They lose, I forget how many pounds of fluid out of their body. So it's crucial that they keep themselves hydrated most of that time during that track, during that run. But, you know, at Bristol, you're one of these things of, you can't just simply go and take a water bottle up and start drinking it during the race because you're going so fast around the track. That's the reason why some of the guys have this thing of a straw that kind of runs in through their hood or their helmet and stuff that they've got, and they're able to drink a little bit of some water or some moisture or something to keep themselves going during the course of this race, or otherwise they'd be overheating really quick is what they'd be doing.
People don't think about this kind of stuff. They just think they're machines when they get out there and run around, right? So, but it's all important stuff. They're human beings, just like. So you're heading down. You'll be there Saturday and Sunday. Talk about your schedule for the weekend.
Well, Saturday, of course, there'll be probably one of the added races. A truck race is what they'll have in there, is what they're scheduled to have, I think, is a truck race this year. Then, of course, the big race is on Sunday. They're going to have the big race on Sunday in the Food City 500. They're kind of going back to a kind of a retro feel, so to speak, back to the 90s is the way things used to be. And so we're going to see a lot of things. As a matter of fact, they painted the track. They went around, they painted the track. It was black all the way around the track with, you know, the saying of the last great Coliseum and different things like that with the sponsorship on it. They've gone back to the red and white look of the 90s when I first started attending the races down there and covering the races. They're going back to that red and white scheme on the walls. So that's going to be interesting to see that. And then also what the drivers are going to pull out of their hats or from up their sleeve and see what they're going to do. Are we going to see an aggressive Bristol, you know, as opposed to maybe what we've seen in the past? I know a lot of people would like to see a little bit more of an aggressive Bristol of the bump and run. That's what was made famous in the 90s. A lot of people would like to see that return. It could very well happen, considering we saw the little brush up of Joey Logano and John Hunter Nemechek this past weekend. John Hunter Nemechek has apologized to Joey Logano, but you know, Joey Logano's having nothing of it. So we've got another feud starting to build here somewhere within the ranks. So Denny Hamlin, he'll be tough to beat there. You know, Joey Logano, he likes Bristol. All of these guys like Bristol one way or the other. It's a matter of that Coliseum sort of, I guess, mantra, if you want to call it that. It's going to be who is still standing at the end of 500 laps. That's what it's all going to boil down to. And if your car, even if it's got a donut on the side from a tire that's rubbed you, or if you've hit the wall, the way these new cars are, you can probably do a little bit better in it. But gosh, back in the 90s, if you hit and you hit the wall, you just didn't come back, or you ran like an old modified out on the track as long as you could to get laps. These cars are a little bit different, so we'll just see who is left standing at the very end of this big battle.
When you talked about what drivers have up their sleeves, it was right after you were talking about the 90s throwback kind of thing. And I was trying to think styles of the 90s, like 80s, you had mullets, you had whatever. I don't really, and I graduated college in 94, so you think I'd be onto this, but I don't did what what could they do? I don't know what haircuts were good in the 90s. I can't think of anything that's particular to the 90s. It just seems like it was kind of a boring era in that sense.
Yeah, I hate to say it that way. It kind of was in the way I look back on it. I didn't find anything, too fascinating about the 90s. There were a couple things that happened and so forth, but it's like, 80s. Yeah, I can kind of associate with the
You go with the
80s and
mullet
stuff.
in the 80s and the
Yeah.
70s, you had sideburns and leisure suits, and 90s was just kind of like guys who didn't shower for days or didn't comb their
Yeah.
hair or whatever. I wouldn't recommend that for the NASCAR guys.
No, and it's kind of like when we went to the Journey concert last year. Here we were and stuff. We were just kind of like, I think Kim and I were prepared for it. I think you guys were prepared too. But then, it was like, oh, I haven't heard that song in a long time. And you start, moving your lips to it. You start singing that song up there in the stands, and then we get the crude wake up call of someone who's a little bit older than us, probably in their 70s or whatever, and they're wearing something that you wouldn't be caught dead in today, but hey, they were wearing it just the way they did in their pride days back in the 70s and the 80s. They don't care. They didn't care one bit about it. So, yeah, I just hope they don't have cut off shorts or anything like that on Saturday and Sunday. The weird stuff that they had in the 90s of some of these things. And I'm not dissing the 90s terribly, but it's one of those things you had to live in the 80s. That's just what was special about it then. I mean, I lived in the 90s, sure, but what do we have to claim for it? I mean, what do we have to claim for it?
I graduated high school in 1990, college in 1994, and I can't think of a single thing I missed from the 90s. So
I think probably one of the things that I can turn around and I can probably say that, yeah, I can probably claim is that I got this newfound sense of humor for Bill Clinton during that time. And that was, he'd go into McDonald's, they'd see him going in on campaign stop in McDonald's and everything. What's his name that was on
Phil Hartman on
news?
Saturday Night
Yeah, Phil
Live,
Hartman
right?
on news radio. They did the little takeoff on him and going into the McDonald's and everything. And then it went from there. It went from a McDonald's sort of setup, and it was like, well, I can't wait to go to Hooters and all this other stuff started coming up. And then that was what was fun. I mean, that was at the, of course we had the Monica Lewinsky thing that happened and so forth. And they tried to impeach him. I think they tried to go and impeach Clinton and get him out of there. But, it's like, that's probably about the only memorable thing beside my son being born in 1990. That's probably the only other thing that, kind of memorable at that point. It's like, how do we define, it's like the question was, and I hate to be bringing this up, but it's kind of like that question that was posed to the president. It's like, did you have relations with his? Well, it all depends on what you define as relations.
I
That's
did
kind
not
of the way it goes.
have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild. I think that time period, yeah, it was kind of wild with certain things. But yeah, I think one of the things that if you notice, like in the logo, and you'll probably see that this weekend when we send you some stuff, you'll probably notice the colors are a little bit more, how can I say, they're not 80-ish, but they're a little bit more subdued colors than what they were from back in the 80s. They were bright in the 80s. This is a little bit of kind of an orange, yellow, gold sort of thing, a blend of this. And I think Jerry Caldwell and Steve Smith with Food City, they did a little thing. It's on a video, I think, somewhere on the Bristol Motor Speedway YouTube site, I think, of them, of the throwback, and they show them in these kind of green jackets. And that's what they had on. I can remember Steve Smith wearing a green jacket with a little bit of yellow trim through here, looking sporty, but it was also looking like, you know, something had been in a paint factory explosion. It's kind of what it looked like. The colors were just completely different than maybe what I was expecting, traditional stuff, you know. And then, well, we still had Winston at that time. We still had Winston, you know, sponsoring the races. And now we don't know who's going to be sponsoring races. It seems like every 2 or 3 years we've got Xfinity, and now Xfinity's looking at possibly moving on to something else. Who knows what it's going to be here by the time 2025 rolls around in 2026. So it's anybody's guess right now at this point.
Before we let you go, the people who are watching the podcast here on YouTube can see that you're wearing a Tampa Bay Buccaneers shirt. And it's not the first time on one of these that you've done that, but there's Tampa Bay Bucs news. Got to get your thoughts on the signing of Baker Mayfield to a 3-year deal, $100 million. The Bucs have their quarterback, at least for the next 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think a lot of people sold Baker Mayfield short. I was just really keeping my fingers crossed at the beginning of the season, hoping he would find a way to become the quarterback that he was when he was at Oklahoma, that what he could do when he got out on the field. And I think Tampa gave him that place. And Tampa, Jason Light and them would have been out of their mind, sort of like Cincinnati Reds owners and front office people, the way they do things. He would have been out of his mind if they had let him go. Because I think he showed such a great poise. I mean, hey, he had them on the verge of the championship game. He had them on the verge. They could have beat the Lions, and the Lions could have been knocked out a lot sooner, but it didn't happen. But Mayfield, still, he made things happen. And you really can't say enough great things about Mayfield without having Mike Evans into that thing also, because they signed Mike Evans, I think, to a 2 or 3 year deal with there that will probably finish out his career. So now you've kind of got some stability there, and the rest of the players are like, hey, keep Baker. Let's see what we can do. We might be able to build on this. And I think it's going to be good for him. But just as soon as I say that, something will happen with Tampa Bay. I'm kind of like in the old John McKay way of things. When John McKay, he'd say there, you know, here they are, they line up, they look good in their uniforms and stuff, and then they make the kick, and then they field the kick, and then he just like throws his arms down. He says, "Ah, hell, we've lost another one." I mean, as the game started, and that's the way he was. And I don't know, maybe I'm just in that kind of feel because I'm just so used to it. I was used to it back in the days when they were the Yuccaneers. You know, I've been with them since the day of the creamsicle jerseys and everything. Back when Doug Williams was a quarterback, he wasn't just a black quarterback, he was a quarterback. And those were some great years too, watching Tampa Bay rise up like they did, and then kind of going through the mediocre years. And I really don't think they gave Tony Dungy his due. I think if they had let Dungy stay a little while longer, I think he could have probably had him in the Super Bowl, but it would have taken a little bit more time, except John Gruden got him in almost immediately. I think that first year he got him in almost immediately after they dismissed Dungy out of the whole thing. So I think they made some good moves. I think it's good that Baker Mayfield's going to stay there. And we'll just see how he goes. We'll see how that shoulder pans out. I know he didn't complain much about the shoulder this year and so forth. He's had surgery on it, but he's just really looking to make a difference somewhere. And that only bids good for, I think, for the Buccaneers, especially with the ever changing picture we see of some of these teams in the NFC South. It's anybody's guess right now. Who knows what's going to happen at Carolina, because Carolina is just shuffling back and forth. So
you see the Falcons are signing Kirk Cousins to be their quarterback.
Yeah.
I'd heard so about it's getting that. A little more serious in the South now.
Yeah. It's going to get serious now. And I think that that's what they're wanting to do. And, you know, let's see, did they end up getting Morse as their coach at Atlanta?
They did. Raheem Morris. Yeah. Yep.
See, and Raheem Morse was coach for Tampa Bay at one period of time. I don't think they gave him a fair enough shake with it. I certainly know for a fact that they gave him a fair shake when they let Greg Schiano coach. Biggest mistake of their life, letting somebody coming from Rutgers to try to coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But, you know, Raheem Moore stepped in, did really good there for a while. And with what he had, trying to build the team back up. And then I said, well, if he goes somewhere and he handles defense, he'll get the attention of somebody. Sure enough, he's got the attention. And I'd say probably John McKay's son, Rich, who kind of has a more subdued role now within the organization. I think he probably had a say in it to kind of help get Raheem Morris there because he knew what Raheem Morris was capable of. So we'll just have to wait and see what the Falcons are going to do. Who knows about the Saints? I don't know what's going to happen with the Panthers. The Panthers are just like, they're like treading in quicksand right now. They're stuck. Their head's not gone under yet, but you know, Tepper is getting pretty close to getting them to where they're about ready to drag under with some of his hijinks and some of the way he's handled things. We'll just have to see. Jerry Richardson, all the stuff Jerry Richardson was supposedly involved in and everything that cost him to have to give up the Panthers and stuff and sell the team pales in comparison to the way that Tepper has been since he took over the organization. So we'll just have to wait and see what's going to happen in the South. And for that matter, the rest of the NFL, because there's going to be some changes all the way around.
Yeah. Hard to keep up with it all. So much going on right now. Mm-hmm. For our listeners and viewers out there, I will be in Washington, D.C. starting tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday. So starting Tuesday, I'll be in D.C. for the ACC tournament. I'll be podcasting from there. Of course, writing like crazy from there. I'll try to get some sleep in between too, but, so there's that to come forward. And then we got Rod heading down to Bristol for the weekend. It is a big week for AFP Sports. And so, Rod, I'm going to just say, I'm going to say something to you that I'm going to say to myself. Get some rest because we got some hard work coming.
Yeah, I know it. And then also, especially the 1st of April, too, where we just got the news today, we're going to be at Martinsville. Yep. You know, that's going to be Final Four weekend and everything, the way the calendar runs, I think, this year, something like that. And so, we're going to be that much more busy depending on whether if UVA can go and make it into it and make it that far. I don't know, but we'll cross our fingers and see, but it'll be a busy weekend that weekend. Also trying to keep up with all these teams and what's going on. And then the race at Martinsville.
You're awfully optimistic. I'm not sure if I'm going to be too busy that weekend, but you will be.
Yeah, I'll be busy. I haven't been to Martinsville. The thing is, I haven't been there in 16 years.
Wow. Okay.
That's the thing. I mean, I worked there for a total of a second semester at school. I taught there at Magna Vista High School. Loved the place. Just had the opportunity to come back home, but I drive by the racetrack. I drive by it going in and it was just unreal. I look at it. I say, yeah, there it is. There's the railroad track running, you know, back behind the racetrack itself. And then my niece, her husband, I don't know if he's going to be coming this year to the race at Martinsville. He's had some bad luck the last couple of years. He'll go in, it snowed or it's been too hot. I think one year they went, it was too cold. Accidentally a tent got set on fire or something. I don't know. Something happened there. And I think he's kind of sworn off Martinsville for a little while. So I'm going to get my shot at it and see what I think about it. So,
isn't that 220 that goes by there?
Yeah.
From Roanoke over back. I've been that way a couple times and yeah, you wouldn't think there's a big NASCAR, two races a year there. You just think, hey, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden it's right there. So it's a big deal for that part of Virginia, certainly big deal for a lot of folks, and glad to get you in there as well. So man, oh man, yeah, we got some busy times coming up. Rod, as always, thank you for your time and your insight.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks.